Welcome everyone to Wise Talk. This is Mariposa's monthly podcast providing perspectives on leadership. Today, I am excited to have my good friend, Steve Cadigan. We've known each other for a very long time, and I'm so excited you're here with us today. He's been at the forefront of global talent strategy and company culture for the past 30 years. He's most famous for scaling LinkedIn from 400 to 4,000 in 3.5 years. He also has led the development of LinkedIn's legendary company culture. Today, he's the founder, he's been the founder of Cadigan Talent Ventures. It's a Silicon Valley-based talent strategies advisory firm, and he helps organizations worldwide develop winning talent solutions. With more than 25 years of leadership and executive experience in global human resources, Steve has practiced HR in the US, Canada, and Asia Pacific within a variety of industries. And we're going to talk about your new book today, which is called Workquake, Embracing the Aftershocks of COVID-19 to Create a Better Model of Working. That's a lot. We've got a lot to talk about. Don't we?
We've got 3 hours, is it? Is that
three hours. Mm-hmm. All right. So I just read your bio, which is very fine. Tell me a little bit more about, tell us really, because I know you, but tell us a little bit more about who you are and why you wrote this book.
Okay. Tell us, sure.
More about you.
I mean, I'm someone who had a pretty eclectic childhood. I grew up in South Africa for 5 years. We were kicked out when I was seven. Grew up in the U.S., had to practice speaking American as a child. So being adapting at a very early age was something that really shaped me. And I think may have been an early signal that I was going to use those in later years. Mm-hmm. I've been in California since I graduated college, except for 2 years in Singapore, 4 years in British Columbia. And I found HR when I was like 2 years out of college and just recruiting and fell in love with it. You and I crossed paths when I decided probably in my mid-30s that I wanted to be really great at this and went to grad school. And you were one of my professors.
You're admitting that, huh?
And still are a professor for me, yeah.
All right.
And then, you know, moved in six different companies, about five different industries, and really just grew to love the what I think is the greatest art form there is, right? The art of helping people learn how to do greater things together. And I have a huge passion for sports, not just as a participant, and I'm very, very competitive. My whole family's competitive, but not just to be an athlete, but to watch how people handle mm-hmm. situations in competition, how you handle victory, defeat, how you handle being behind, how you handle, you know, crazy coaches versus coaches that don't say anything. And I just, that joy and love I have for sport has really translated well to mm-hmm. just in the organizational setting.
Yeah.
And so I've loved it. And today I've got three teenagers. I remarried four or five years ago, and my wife has two girls. So we have like the Brady Bunch, three boys and two girls. But I've coached my boys' sports since they were able to be in competitive sports, soccer, baseball, basketball. They've all sort of fallen in love with basketball, which is a joy to me because I did play 1 year in college. I was not very good. I sat the bench, but I love that. And so, you know, today I stopped working for an employer about 10 years ago at LinkedIn after that crazy 4 year ride, which felt like 20.
Right.
And it was probably the best hair color treatment. If you want to go gray, just go in a hyper growth organization.
Right.
Really fast.
That was 10 years ago you left. God, that's amazing.
Yeah. Okay. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
So since then, I've just been working with a lot of organizations. I mean, I didn't know what I wanted to do, honestly, when I left LinkedIn. I had no idea other than I like to take a breath, and I had a chance for about a year to just reconnect with people I really missed. And because mm-hmm. sometimes you get so hunkered down that you cross paths or you work with and you meet people, and I sort of reconnected with all these people. And over that year started to get a sense of what I wanted to do. And that was definitely heavily weighted towards teaching and coaching mm-hmm. and not professional coaching, but teaching and helping people solve talent problems, whether it's hyper growth or whatever. And, mm-hmm. And so that sort of led me to found my own firm and to do this. I'm not a long-term consultant. I'm more of, I call myself a flash advisor. I want to go in and shake you up a little bit. And then you say, well, Steve, how do we make that stuff happen? I go, here's Sue. She'll come in and help figure it out. So
I like it. Like flash advisor, drive-by advisor. I love it. And so the book I know has been sort of something you've been wanting to do for a long time. What an amazing timing that you... when you wrote it, and you had to kind of rewrite it a little bit, I bet.
I did. I was 80% done when the pandemic hit mm-hmm. and had that moment of, oh no, maybe everything I've been focused on is going to be worthless if the world is going to be upside down.
Right.
And then thankfully I woke up one morning and said to my wife, like, you know what? I actually think my book stands up even more.
Right.
And a lot of what I've been talking about has just accelerated and introduced even more new things. So had to write a new chapter, had to infuse COVID into the mm-hmm. book in ways. And it was still, gosh, it was still unfolding. We were only about 9 months, 6 to 9 months in when I had to submit it to the mm-hmm. publisher. But yeah, I was, you know, very fortunate. I got a big assist from the pandemic for, you know, people's raised awareness of how, you know, the future of work is just radically yeah. going through radical transformation.
Well, it's just mm-hmm. every day. It seems like something new. Okay. So let's get right to the great migration. Yeah. Let's get to it. Cause we couldn't have seen this coming really, but there's a great migration. What are you seeing? What's happening?
I'll tell you the thoughts that are hitting me this week. Here we are about 20 months into the pandemic, and I feel like we are just hitting a point now where most business leaders are going, huh, I guess we're not going back to the way that anymore. My whole book, my whole life and yours too, Sue, is about, you know, it's adaptability. It's building cultures of change. It's about not building for consistency. It's building for adapting to inconsistency and unpredictable moments.
Uncertainty, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and most, especially the larger organizations, non-tech driven companies, whether it's consumer goods or, you know, distribution, you know, deal with all kinds of industries, and they're not comfortable with experimentation. When they don't have a huge base of software developers who are all used to experimentation in how they build and develop products, mm-hmm. that can migrate easy to culture. And these non-tech oriented organizations, they're like, wow, I guess the new normal is never normal. We're going to have to reconsider it. So that's mm-hmm. what I'm seeing now, is we're finally hitting that point.
Yep.
It's just been a absolute brutal period for talent leaders and business leaders, everything from, you know, we knew that we could create value when everyone was together, and we don't know that we can create value in this new framework. And human nature is, in a crisis, revert to what you know, revert to your strength, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why we're seeing this real pullback to, and fear, especially among senior executives. I mean, think about it. If your career is on the line and you don't know that you can produce in this new, you know, complex puzzle of hybrid and from home and some in-person stuff, like, what do you do and how do you approach it? Meanwhile, you know, attrition continues to climb.
Yeah.
And you know, you and I were talking about this a few months ago. I think we're going to see it even escalate, because the early movers are the people that have no kids and no mortgages and no homes and no major bills. The people that have all those are taking their time. They're seeing what's out there.
Yes.
And the market's on fire. I'll give a story for you and the listeners. I was telling you right before we went on air, I was in Durango last week. I'd never been to Colorado before, and I was invited there by a local economic forum there, about 400 business leaders. And the business leaders that have workers who can work for them from home are terrified, because their workers are getting phone calls from companies all over the country and beyond, including the business owners are getting phone calls, you know, from people for opportunities. And they've never played in that, you know, we live in the Silicon Valley-ish area where it's the war for talents has just been forced all kinds of creativity for years. And if you've been working in a space where you haven't had to do that, and think about the Durango businesses have this beautiful landscape of outdoors activities. Now they don't know how to recruit without that, you know, in their back pocket. And so I think that all these call it hospitality are terrified right now. And you're seeing, we're seeing all kinds of what I will call irresponsible, knee-jerk panic moves, you know, ridiculous signing bonuses, all kinds of things, you know, money, usually money related, to try to buy their way out of this problem.
Right. Right. So, and that's sort of the gist of, I definitely want to talk about from the employee's perspective. And I also want to talk about from the employer's perspective, but let's start with the employees, because there's some things about, you kind of divide the book into employees and employees. Let's start with the employees. Like, what's the main thrust of your idea around what employees should be thinking about?
I think the psychology of the workforce has really shifted, and employees, whether you cognitively process this and absorb it yourself, we're moving to a domain where I think we are reconsidering what job security and career security is, mm-hmm. from being stationary to movement. Mm-hmm. That mm-hmm. And that's, it's not comfortable for everyone, but most people are starting to realize, hey, the more I move, the more I get exposed to new ideas, new ways of solving mm-hmm. problems, new mm-hmm. techniques, new cultures, new leadership styles. The more my network grows, the more new opportunities can find me, the more people I have to phone a friend when I hit a stumbling block or a cliff that I'm not sure I can climb. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing, and it's happened pretty fast. I would say maybe in the last decade where we used to think staying in one place
right.
was valuable, but businesses and jobs, I mean, ask any recruiter, how long does a job description really hold up? And they'll tell you maybe 2 months. Mm-hmm. So what I'm trying to tell employees is, hey, every job's changing. Your value to yourself and your vitality mm-hmm. for the future work is going to really reside in how fast you can learn and apply new things. And that doesn't mean you need to change jobs necessarily. You know, there's lots of reasons why people are changing jobs beyond what I've already said. But I think that, you know, the more you can learn and apply new things fast, the more valuable you're going to become. And you're not going to have to be in this infinite rat chase of, well, I need to learn that skill. I need to learn that skill, but I may have a shorter shelf life. So, but if you can just be confident that, hey, learning new things is going to make me more valuable. So I'm going to seek opportunities and organizations and firms where I'm going to be exposed to new things, new ways of solving problems. And that's how I'm seeing the shift mm-hmm. to try to make people more comfortable. Because you know, there's still stigma with job movement, right? There's still
Ask about that. Because like executives, especially, I mean, like what do you tell an executive who has moved and, you know, is thinking that that's a negative job, that the employers will think of that as a negative? I don't think it's a negative. I think you've had a lot of good experiences and you've been able to move and change and get and drop in quickly, right? And get going. Yeah. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the pace of movement and the acceptance of movement is rising. Right? That more and more people have changed and will change. And I think, you know, we can't say there's a right number or amount of time per organization, per industry. It varies. Like, hey, if we're hiring hospital staff, I do not want people changing out because lives are on the line. You know? So I want to hold on to people. If we're putting someone on the moon and they could die if we get it wrong, like I don't want, and that's where problems can happen when there's a lot of turnover. So it's not true for every industry, but for a lot, I think what I'll tell executives is, I mean, let's take a look at the automobile industry, for example. Right now, the most valuable automobile company is Tesla. Now, they're not selling more cars. They're not making more profit, but they're worth more than Honda, Toyota, and Ford combined. And their median tenure is 2.3 years. And so they built a new business. They're under 25 years old as a company, I believe.
Yeah.
They built a new business with people with different perspectives and new ideas. And that workforce has come together with different perspectives. Mm-hmm. And the investor community has voted that they're far more valuable because I believe the perception is they can innovate faster.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm thinking back to my days at LinkedIn when we're sitting in the boardroom and something would hit us that we weren't ready for, a problem. And it felt like every day there was multiple problems, but that's another story. So we'd sit there and Jeff Weiner, the CEO at the time, would say, hey, Deep, how did you guys solve this at Google? Hey, David, how did we solve this at Yahoo? Hey, Steve, how'd you solve it at Cisco and EA? And that collective mm-hmm. experience and muscle that we built in other organizations was what our value was.
Right.
And so I think what the current state of a higher fluid world of work is exposing to us right now is I think we may have overvalued, again, a big generalization, I think we may have overvalued tenure in this mm-hmm. new world of work where things are changing mm-hmm. so fast. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If things weren't changing fast, yes, longer term, understanding our market, exactly. understanding our people, building social equity, that was valuable. That's not as valuable today as new ideas, new ways of solving problems, new perspectives, new networks. I'm seeing recruiters now look at candidates based on how rich their network is and how dense it is, not just to recruit from, but also to source for ideas and inspiration. Right. So, you know, again, I don't think we would do the audience justice if we're trying to make everyone comfortable that, hey, you know, executives, it's okay. I mean, it is uncomfortable because it's not what we were told, right?
Yeah, we were told that if they're there, as somebody pointed out in the chat, if they're at a company 1 or 2 years, they didn't last long, like they didn't work out. That's what it could look like. It could be something different. Okay, so let's talk about from the employer's perspective. It's kind of crazy. I was talking to someone this morning in Berlin, and they're a startup, and they're trying to recruit for a new product head. And we talked about like the kind of questions that they asked and how they're trying to find people that are more startup-y. I want people that are more sharp, that can take a hit, essentially, can be resilient. And because I want to start recruiting in the United States, but it's more, you know, too expensive. And I'm like, okay. And then talking with people here, it's like they can now recruit beyond the Silicon Valley, find somebody who just got out of Carnegie Mellon and they can, wherever they are, and not have to be in Silicon Valley. So how are these strategies changing given COVID? Because as I said, we both agree here that things aren't going to go back to where they were. That's going to be remote or hybrid. It's at least going to be hybrid. So and most companies, I think, in Silicon Valley are doing remote only at this point. How do these talent strategies change?
All right. So let's step back and talk about the big trends. People are leaving faster. Nobody believes it's going to change. It's not temporary. That everyone I talk to, every business leader in every geography, every industry, that's the biggest problem, as you've already pointed out. And nobody thinks it's going to change. So I think what we have to do is say, okay, if that is true, what is our mission here? Our mission is to create value. We've believed that full-time employees are the pathway to sustainable competitive advantage. And I would argue that what we're seeing in the Valley, and maybe it is a trendsetter that will hit other parts of the world, a lot of great people are leaving full-time employment and going to a more Fiverr, Upwork, independent model because of the premium they place on autonomy and independence. And which would suggest to me, and I do think the stigma of being an IC and a temp has come way down, and almost on par with being an employee. The problem in the US obviously is the awful healthcare system that we have. That's another story for another episode.
That's right.
But when I'm talking to organizations, say they're saying, well, what do we do? Like, I can't find people. They're not staying as long. I'm saying, well, why are people leaving? I think people are leaving because they're concerned that they're not growing and building their vitality for tomorrow. If you can feed that with not just bringing professors in, but how you design work that's giving new challenges, new experiences, and making them more likely to be able to leave, I think you stand a greater chance of keeping people. I think that's the most important element of the new compensation stack, if you will, is autonomy, freedom, independence, but also the what we call learning velocity. You know, extent to which the job itself delivers new experiences and new things. And you ask anyone, and then, you know, again, I asked the business leaders in Durango this last week, when have you, business leader, been most energized? When you've been doing the same thing 5 years, or when you took on something new and it was scary and maybe you weren't prepared? And they're like, definitely something new. I said, okay, well, you're tapping into energy right now.
Right.
This is what's going on in Silicon Valley. Like, when I look at LinkedIn, we built a $26 billion company that was sold in 15 years to Microsoft. Right? For 26 something billion dollars, the median tenure the whole time I was there, 9 months. So what's going on? Well, all the senior leaders, when you're doubling the size of your population every year, they're recruiting and their lieutenants are stepping into their jobs, doing something on paper they're not qualified to do. Being inspired, unlocking energy. Now it's something like, whoa, I'm stepping in this bigger job and I'm going to be more valuable tomorrow because I'm doing new stuff and the company's not doing a belly flop, thank goodness. But my boss is not gone. They're busy, but they're available to do mentoring, right? And that was just interesting to me. And I think, you know, back to this, I think a lot of people are migrating into independent contractor roles. Who says you can only get your value created with a full-time employee? Who says that? And what's driving that is all the business, the CFO models where headcount, you know, we don't have track. That's right. So we got a lot of inertia.
Right. Well, and then you, in your slogan in your book is "Come to my company so I can help you leave it." I mean, that's a risky thing, and you sort of alluded to it.
Come on, you know me. I'm not about the.
Well, I know.
Road. Tell us what I'm about saying there.
How do you help people think? How do you help people get there?
Okay, so you know, one of the things my publisher, my PR team was saying, hey, you got to have some provocative points in the book. I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to push it a little bit here and say, come to my company so I can help you leave it. And where I'm getting with that is, you know, something that was one of the reasons why I wrote this book, which was I've been just increasingly disappointed with these fake conversations that we have between employer and employees. Hey, stay here a long time and I'll promise to keep you employed a long time. We both know we're not going to follow through on that commitment, but let's have that be the foundation of how we work together.
You commit to stay. It's for your vesting. Like, that's alone is an issue.
That's right. And nobody believes it, but we still go ahead and do that. So what I say is maybe a more honest conversation is caring about someone more than just when they work for you, the entirety of their career, not just when they're employed by you, and say, let me do what Chipotle does. We know this is not your destination. We know we're a transition employer. We know you have other aspirations, but let's optimize you to get you where you want to go while you're here. And we hope in doing that, you're going to bring more of your really talented friends here. We hope you're going to say positive things on the internet and chirp, goodness about us. You're going to eat here. We're a B2C. So we want this relationship to be good. But we know it's not going to be forever, and that's okay. And we're going to just double down on all kinds of tuition reimbursement education for you. And you only have to be here for like a week full time, and then boom, we'll do it. Or some very, very minimal number of hours. And I'm starting to see, Sue, many other larger enterprises start to come to terms with, we're not the perfect destination for everyone forever. And that's okay. Right. We're part of someone's
the forever
journey.
Part. Yeah. Because I think that you're going to, I agree with what you're saying, but I think you're going to get some pushback. But I have one more question before, and that is, it costs a lot of money to hire an executive. And let's call executives from, even managers, directors. Okay, it costs a lot of money to recruit them, whether they're hiring a search firm or just the time that their own recruiters are spending. And so a lot of people don't want to be letting people just go because it costs a lot of money to get new people in. So talk a little bit about how we can shift the way we look at getting people in. And so it doesn't cost so much because it costs a lot of money.
Right. I mean, there's infinite ways of being creative there. If we're stuck with, I need someone versus I need this work done. And maybe there's creative fractional ways of splitting work up. Again, some of the business models we have or how we forecast, how we plan business blocks the creativity there. And several people who've started companies trying to get, women who've had kids who don't want to go back full time to be able to work that. And it just doesn't work because a lot of businesses just aren't built to sustain that model. But, just take a look at how many organizations, if we take a look at right now, Facebook, Slack, LinkedIn, Airbnb, Microsoft, Oracle, Apple, the median tenure in those companies is right around 2 years. And they're doing pretty good.
Right.
And so some of that could be skewed if you're hiring really fast, that your median tenure is going to come down. Or if you've done a bunch of acquisitions and you restarted the clock on how you measure length of employment.
Right.
But I think, yes, there is cost, but I think the cost is worse if you're building expecting people to stay a long time. And then you have all these single points of failure. Someone, oh my gosh, I think we're going to have to build organizations in a way. And I don't have all the answers here, but no one disagrees that people are going to leave faster. So is it, maybe we can organize work differently, or maybe we can set up business differently so that we build to expect people will leave.
Right. I think that we get surprised. We have a pulse on what people are, how they're feeling. So then you'll know like that they're ready to go because they are ready to go. Let's talk about, and I want to talk about culture and communication here in a second, but I want to open the lineup for anyone who wants to ask Steve a question. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Steve. So a lot of my clients are dealing with, this kind of, they don't really necessarily use the old term VUCA, volatile, uncertain, complex, or ambiguous, but they're stressed out. They're having a lot of uncertainty and all this churn, as you've been speaking most of today about kind of, churn isn't a bad word necessarily, but let's call them the remainders, the survivors. Mm-hmm. And so they asked me, Michael, I'm losing great people. Every story, maybe, mazel tov, congratulations, it's okay, but I'm still here. And I'm trying to keep my people still here, right? There's absenteeism. There's also that thing called presenteeism, when you're present, but you're not really present. And so people are really stressed out. So, if somebody is kind of, for whatever reason, in a model that you might suggest is an older model, what have you seen, or what do you think about that challenge?
Yeah, here's how I think about this, because everyone's feeling like that. And it's almost, I was talking to a CEO yesterday. It's like, it's almost like it's not cool to stay longer now. It's starting to move, like some of the people that are talking to you, like, is something wrong with me that I'm still here?
I call it left at the dock. You're right. Left at the dock. The ship has sailed with all your friends and you're still standing there.
Right. So here's a couple of interesting conversations I've had in the last few weeks. Someone calls and they go through the whole cycle of everything that we just talked about. Can't hire people leaving faster. And then I go, hey, how's your business done during COVID? Oh, really well. Sales are up. increased market share. I go, huh, isn't that interesting? So your ability to adapt is as measured by increased market share, increased revenue. Maybe the measures of a healthy organization need to shift. Maybe we shouldn't be feeling so dour because our turnover is up. Maybe we should be celebrating people leaving, going on to bigger, better things. I don't know. But I think, and that's four companies I talked to in the last month. That's how the conversation went. That's where it started. And then the second was, well, how's business? So really good. Okay. So why do you seem all bummed out? You
know, well, yeah, because I'll just to give you what that was, somebody might, well, I'm bummed out because those four people had very important jobs. Yeah. And now the people that aren't leaving are going to have to do all that work, or we're going to prioritize, you know, whatever. We're going to have to sort all that work now.
Right, right. And then we get to, there's a friend of mine, Shahar Rez, has got a company called Stoke Talent, and Stoke Talent has built a platform to help you manage your contingent workforce. Because I've worked in big companies, and there's lots of people that no one knew who's paying them or how they got here. But you've got this big, dark, invisible workforce. I think we need to look for other solutions than just a full-time employee. There's a ton of talent that can be applied in different ways. And I know the intellectual property lawyers are like, no, we can't have all these people around and, you know, company secrets and all that. But what's the cost of having that wreck open for a long time? What's the cost to the culture? What's the cost, as you say, to the morale? It's a hit. You know, when we've got all these people who could come in and offer maybe a different way of doing it. And I think that's what we're at a very close to a breaking point where a lot of people are really stressed out because we're still stuck on, I need someone and they need to do this job. Maybe we need to reorganize how work gets done in different ways and sort of deconstruct jobs so that it's not one person's got to do all this and we're not, it's going to take us 6 months to find someone else. And then after 6 months of training, when we hire them, they're going to, you know, look for another. So we're going to have to be more creative here. I think.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Stress reductions is cooperate with the inevitable.
Right. Right. Cool. Well said. Well said, Michael.
Thanks, Michael. Anyone else have a question or comment?
Do you have any kind of specific ideas for what companies need to do, what they need to change in their talent management strategies to adapt to this new world?
Well, at a high level, I think, you know, when I speak to executives, you know, people are leaving faster. Do you think it's a change? No. Okay. So why is every one of your benefits driven by length of tenure? What if we changed all these, the costs, the investment that we're making that are driven by long tenure? What if we shift those to development? What if we shift to closer relationship with universities or schools where we can access pools of talent that can be sort of an incubator for people understanding our business challenges and helping solve it? It's how we solved our recruiting challenges at LinkedIn when we went through the fastest growth years. And this was sort of ironic, like our biggest company problem was also our biggest product, it was recruiting. We couldn't hire fast enough. And we realized we are not going to win in the open market for talent because we're getting outbid, outperked, outbenefited by all these sexy brands in the, you know, Mountain View area. So what can we do? And we said, we're going to have to grow talent instead of buy talent. And we were at scale at that time, like 1,000, 1,500 people, but we went from no interns to 50 to 100 to 250 so that almost all the incremental technical hiring that we did was out of schools. Cool. Much easier place, by the way, to recruit from if your business can afford to do the internships and grow the talent, right? So that's one strategy that I've seen. I've also seen people start to do things like one organization I was working with recently. Well, let's just take Canva. You heard what Canva did. Canva said, okay, we're growing like gangbusters. And what we're hearing from our talent is that they want freedom, independence, and autonomy almost as much as in the new compensation stack. That's very high for them. So we're going to let our teams decide how and where and when they work. That's not something we're going to centrally do. We're going to decentralize the decision-making for that, which is super powerful. Mm-hmm. Here's another interesting bit of data. So I don't subscribe to a lot of news services, but I'm starting to subscribe to more. And one of the ones I sort of have a love-hate relationship, Business Insider. Mm-hmm. Business Insider published an article yesterday or the day before. The cannabis industry now has in the United States closing in on 500,000 workers. And in the last 9 months, they've seen an explosion of recruiting. Now, think about this. This is a, you know, I guess, call it a rebellious business model in some respect, because it's still illegal and cannabis sales still illegal in most of the states in the United States. Banks are still not allowing for, you know, transactions to go through. It has to be all cash. Mm-hmm. And people are flocking there. What's going on? I think people are seeing this rebellious business leader, you know, community is more open to being creative,
yes,
with employment circumstances. And so they listed several people. It's an interesting article. They listed several people from retail, say, I'm making a little bit less, but I'm winning in the end because I like the freedom of my time and autonomy. And I feel a lot more relaxed. So it's just interesting, you know.
And freedom, and freedom of what they, of the work, Laurie, itself. Freedom of the work itself too.
Yeah.
They get to do more. I think that there's a lot about creativity around what kind of work do they get to do. That's a part of the timing of it as well.
That's right. And here's the thing, getting back to the point we talked about earlier, which is, I think what people really want is to be more valuable tomorrow. And before the pandemic, one of the companies that I was so curious about was the scooter industries company in Santa Monica, Bird. It was just a fascination for me that they were exploding. They had no recruiting problem, and they should have a recruiting problem because it's a new industry. There's no business to plan for profitability in the next 5 years. There's no leader on that team that could say, we know everything about the scooter industry because it's only about 4 years old. And they were turning down more applicants than they could handle. I was like, what's going on? And the answer is the same as why the cannabis industry, I think, is an appeal. If I can build a new business and show that I can grow something new, that sets me up for a really, a future with more options. Mm-hmm. In a world where disruption and change is happening faster, if I can go to cannabis and say, wow, I can make this work out of nothing. Or a scooter industry, which is the future transportation industry, you know, and here's a business where their plans, I'm sure in most scooter businesses, in 10 years, we're not going to be selling scooters. There's no way. And no one who goes there thinks, oh yeah, everyone's going to be riding scooters forever. No, they know it's a company of reinvention and they want to be in that reinvention place, right? And so to the extent that you're a business and you have those places where you have pockets of newness that's growing, that I think is going to be the light that moths are going to want to fly towards, that I would be talking about to try to draw people in and say, hey, we're doing stuff no one else is doing, you know, and that's going to make you more valuable for tomorrow. And this gets to the last point that I want to make sure I land, Sue, in the conversation, which is, as a recruiter who's been recruiting for 35 years, we used to recruit on our journey. Come here because we are this, we are going there. It's our journey. That's the message. Yeah. And I think it's pivoting to, I need to know your journey. Where are you going? What do you want to do? How can I get you there? And I talk about it in the book, right? At LinkedIn, we would say in the first interview, when you leave, where do you want to be? And they're like, what? You're firing me? I haven't even started yet. Like, and it was, right. But it was changing the conversation from us to you. And if we're not having that conversation now, you're really, really missing out. And that's what I think the pandemic has served the opportunity of a lifetime of. We have to know each other more during the pandemic because stuff is impeding us at home. It's going to block us being effective at work. And so we that's a good thing that's happened, I think. And I hope we don't lose that. But this is where, you know, Laurie, to get to some of these are sort of ideas that I have around deeper personal connection with people, understanding what their journey is, doing your best to deliver on it. If you can't, and say, okay, we're not the best place for you. Someone else might be able to deliver that. Because if you hire them and you know their journey is different, you're really renting them for a short period of time and then they're gonna leave, right?
Mm-hmm. Laurie, you have a follow?
Nope, that was it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
All right. So I want to shift. We started talking about it a little bit, shift to more culture learning capacity. So we've been foreshadowing it this whole time. Something Michael said that was really interesting around the remainders, the people that are still there. What are the people that are there doing in terms of staying close to understanding people's, close to their employees, to understanding where their journey is, understanding what's going on for them, understanding what they're upset about, what they're good about, everything. I think that the pandemic has required it, has put us in a place where we have to know more about that anyway, because people could be sick. I mean, there's just more health in involvement, just that alone. So what are your thoughts on how people can stay close, especially like, let's just assume in these remote and hybrid.
Yeah, this is a big one, Sue. I mean, I feel like wellness has gone to the top of the talent agenda and it wasn't there before. And you know, people working in different circumstances, less, you know, I don't know about the folks who are listening in, but when I would start a new job, the first thing I wanted to know quickly was, am I good with my new boss or not? Like, I want to know, do I feel they trust me? Can I trust them? And I don't know that the pathway to achieve that is as easy so far, because we don't know how to do that yet. We don't have those informal moments or those collisions in the hallway, right, in the break room at lunch, yep, that we had. And so my advice is, while we try to navigate this, is to be more purposeful and intentional around those informal moments. Now, the challenge is, I'm so done with Zoom at the end of the day. Like, I don't want another informal Zoom. Like, I'm so over it, right? Let's just each go on a hike in our own places where we're living, and let's just put something in our ear and just have a conversation. Let's be in a different physical space.
Right.
I'm seeing people experiment with that. I'm seeing people experiment with sort of spin wheel lottery connecting two people that they've never met in the company, and they have to have a virtual lunch or coffee or something like that. I'm seeing people do a multiplayer online games department to department and having chats in there. I've seen chess tournaments where people in product and engineering meet for the first time. They've been in the company 3 years together and like, oh, what are you guys working on down there, while they're, mm-hmm, you know, playing a game. So, and I think organizations are going to have to create that space for that to happen. You know, I don't know what the right amount is, but I feel like we are in a very dangerous point right now where if we're not creating downtime, off time, informal time, that it's gonna continue to show that the rise in anxiety and depression is not gonna change.
Yeah, and also it's also, if people don't get close, they're not going to be as committed, and there's going to be more reason they're going to leave, not for the right reasons. Because like the new people that I've been told by Fred, and also people that I've been working with, it's like they're hiring a lot of people now that have never seen each other because they've hired people in COVID. So it's like, right, well, how do I get connected and stay close when I've never even met them before? And so if people don't feel committed, then they can, it's easier for them to go. So one of the things that one of our other coaches got from one of her clients was, instead of doing one-on-ones, he does half and halves. And what that means is, I just love this. He says half the meeting he has with his directs are about how they're doing. Half of the meetings. So it's a 30-minute meeting, 15 minutes is just how you're doing, what are you up to, how's your family, and the other 15 minutes is operations. And
oh my gosh, I love that.
Isn't that awesome? I'm like, okay, we got to write about that. It's just because, and he thought to do it, and because it's what's needed.
Right.
And that kind of thing, that stickiness will keep people interested.
We have an opportunity. That's right. So we have an opportunity that I hope we take advantage of. Shame on us if we don't, given everything that's changed, to rebuild better. And I think that's one of the ones where we can leverage the increased greater awareness that someone's personal circumstances are meaningful. And I also think in the background, pre-pandemic, you know, this whole tech obsessed, you know, I don't need to see anyone. I don't need to ask my neighbors for butter or sugar because I can just have it delivered. And because I'm not asking them, I'm not knocking on their door, opening it up, seeing they're not feeling well, saying, or them missing, hey, can you change my light bulb? Like, I have an elderly neighbor, and every time I go over there, there's something she'd like me to do. Can you put this up on the shelf? Can you change that light bulb? Whatever.
Right.
And I almost sometimes go over, even if I don't have something to do, because I know
she needs something. Yeah, yeah.
But this is where I think organizations can deliver community, because I think a lot of us are missing that. And maybe that may be one of those things that can hold on to someone a little bit longer. And there's been tons of studies around, why do some great employees, high-performing employees, never leave when they have opportunities to get more money? Well, it's because of the relationship equity. Right. They know all the players, all the players know them. And I've seen over the course of my career, many people leave and then they come back and go, yeah, wasn't as great as I thought. And now they're back with purpose. And why I love the boomerang people, because they're here, and they've got a reason to be here, and they know they tasted it. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, again, it gets back to what we were talking about earlier, Sue, which is we're going to have to experiment and see and hopefully leverage, you know, these opportunities like the half and half. I mean, you got to blow that. That's got to be like a blog right there. It's such a great one.
Well, yeah. I have to give credit to Donna Stoneham because her client that she came up with it. But it's just an example of we have ways to stay close. I mean, I just think it's not about necessarily even, it's not just about being connected. It's about being close. Those are different. And I think that we need to understand where people are coming from. We need to understand their circumstance because it's changing every day. Really, it can be, it could be. Mm-hmm. And I really do think that's why because that creates loyalty. Mm-hmm. And so we can juxtapose this. We can say, yes, we want to bring people in so they can leave eventually and be okay with that. But for the time that they're there, that we want loyalty both ways as much as we can. So, mm-hmm. So I thanks for talking about that. Okay, a couple more things. Where are we at here? We got time. So you talk about learning capacity and how important that is for employees to feel like they're learning something, they're doing interesting work. What can employers do to ensure that they're highlighting agility, that they're teaching that, especially in hybrid remote? It's not just about having a training class. So what can we do to help people learn in a different way?
Well, I think we've danced around this in some other conversations we've had today, which is appreciate the energy that gets unlocked when people are taking on new things and look to design work to unlock some of that energy. And it's easy to say, hey, I want to help you realize your career ambitions, but it's harder when you ask someone, what is your ambition? Like, I'm not really sure. I have more choice. I have more ways that I could make a living today than ever before because I can see more. And that's not netting comfort. It's netting more anxiety because I have more reasons to think I might've made the wrong choice.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think having more conversations, having more, you know, those half and halves, having more, you know, discussions with people and sharing the learnings. And I think some of that connective tissue that we talked about earlier can happen with, you know, helping people build relationships inside and outside the organization. Many organizations are so insular in their thinking, like we're going to have a mentoring program only with pairing people inside the company.
Right.
You know, why don't we pair our employees with people outside the company?
Right.
And that's just like succession planning. Like the best succession plans aren't the ones where only people on the company are on the list. It's when people outside the company are on the list. Cause as we said earlier, new people, new ideas, new ways of solving problems.
Well, on that note, at least if you're going to do succession planning, like somebody from this part of the organization can succeed somebody from another part of the organization. Doesn't have to be in that same, you know, silo.
That's right. I think all of us, if we take a look at our career arcs, we'll find fondness for people that took a risk on us that we probably on paper weren't ready to do something or qualified, mm-hmm. and we did great. And that belief that someone had in us, are we doing that? Are we paying that forward? You know, are we looking at that? Because most people won't. And here's why. And I mean, it's not a cut on anyone. The more if you don't have experience, you're a risk to me. If you're a risk to me, that means you're putting my weekend, you're putting my evenings at risk because maybe stuff won't get done. You may be putting my job at risk because I'm taking a risk on you. And at scale, that becomes pretty scary, right? Just like when I was at Cisco and all the GE HR people invaded and said, we're going to measure your success as a leader by how well you move people around.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not done. They started rigging the performance management system, mm-hmm. so the people mm-hmm. who weren't good looked like they were good, and then passing the sort of mediocre talent around the organization and making it look like, hey, I'm moving good talent around. And so, I mean, I get it. It's human nature. If you ask a salesperson, give me your best person, they're like, why? That's like that's my bonus. Why would I give you my bonus? You know, and the company, well, you got to think bigger than that. Like, yeah, really? No, because you're going to fire me if I don't make my number. And that person, she's crushing it. You know, why would I do that? So, you know, the truth is both perspectives are fair. Mm-hmm. And we have to try to find, you know, what if you say, I got to give my best salesperson up. I'm not going to want to do that unless I know I'm getting someone as good or better in return. Right. Mm-hmm. Until that flywheel starts moving and trust is there, you're not going to realize it. That's why it's hard. It's hard.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Let's talk about networking and connecting. So this is a different kind of connecting because I think that given that we don't like have the water cooler, like we're finding like, you know, we used to walk around companies and, you know, go from one person to another and not find new people and not without even trying. right? What do we need to do now in terms of networking? We're not in and about in coffee houses or in the companies.
Yeah. Let me share how I got the job at LinkedIn, which is a story I think I tell in the book. I was going to a kid's birthday party. My kids are in daycare. One of his friends at the school at the daycare was having a birthday party, and it was at what's called Gilroy Gardens. It's a kid's Disneyland. And as a dad, you're thinking, oh, great. Kids with sugar screaming at the top of their lungs all afternoon, cannot wait for that moment. So I sort of reluctantly took my son to this thing. And over the course of the walking around the park, I met another dad who was there, and he was applying for a job at LinkedIn. I offered to help him close his offer with them and try to negotiate more for him. He was grateful and came back to me a few months later and says, hey, we got this job. Are you interested in applying? I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm fine at electronic arts. He's like, no, man, you're really the kind of person we want to have here. It's like, okay, I reluctantly did it. A kid's birthday party was a networking opportunity of a lifetime that opened a door. I mean, what are the odds of that happening? And so I think we have to rethink what networking really is. And some people think, oh, it's got to be, I've got to go to those, industry association meetings or, a night with strangers, which is so uncomfortable.
They're not happening right now. Even if you
could. I know. Right. But even as an extrovert, I don't like those kinds of things. I don't like being around a lot of people I don't know.
Yucko.
But so I would think, like, we all know people. So what I would say is you've got a stale, huge stale network that you've not been nurturing. Reach out to those people. Just talk to them. How's it going? We all know tons of people we haven't talked to in a while that something could be crossing their radar. And because you're calling them, they're gonna be, oh, hey, I was just thinking of you because you reached out to me. So I'll tell you a funny story. I started doing TikTok about a year ago, and I've got, I think, of like 120,000 followers now, and I'm closing in on a million likes on my content. And the half and half one might turn into a TikTok one of these days. But so I'm on TikTok. And within 2 weeks of me being on TikTok, a colleague that I used to work with at LinkedIn reaches out to me. A LinkedIn colleague reaches out to me and says, hey, I saw you on TikTok. I don't know why I didn't think of this. Can you come in and do a seminar for my team? I was like, really? TikTok is returning, and it was a paid, engagement. I was like, wow, from a TikTok. So, there are places where, again, back to this sort of, you have many passive people that we all know. And I like to frame networking as helping people that you know and asking for help from people that you know. Start there. It's not about adding people, strangers. No. Those people will come. But like the other place, Sue, where I have like ridiculous network, if I really wrote people's names down and I haven't leveraged it that much, is coaching in Menlo Park. Are you kidding me? I've coached the CFO Twitter's son. I've coached the guy that does all the digital photography for Apple and baseball. I mean, all these people are just like, or go watch your kids play sports and ask the person next to them, hey, who are you? What do you do? Like, what?
Right. I know.
Ridiculous.
At grocery stores. It's like the grocery store.
Yeah, it is. And so there are places where it's not forced. And right. I know it doesn't feel easy, but we all know a ton of people. Now's the time, if things are a little bit slow or you're wanting to, think about your network, is just activate the one that's been dormant.
Right. Yeah. And I think we need to get out. I mean, like, it's safe to go out as long as you're outside. We don't have to do these indoor big, event things. It's just go in the park or go to coffee outside. I mean, there's a lot of things we can do. And we can also travel. I mean, I said to one of my clients a couple months ago, it's like, remote does not mean we're not traveling. You can still get on a plane. It's pretty safe to get on a plane. Once you get there, you got to be careful, especially where you go. But I think that we can't just, stay in too insular. I mean, we can come out a little bit. So that's good. Any final words, my friend? Thank you so much. This has been another good conversation.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Sue. I guess I'll just restate something I said earlier. We have the greatest opportunity of a lifetime to rebuild the future work in a better way. Shame on us if we go back to our old ways. We have to. It's kind of
our time.
We're compelled to. We have to do it. And it doesn't mean you have to change everything, but experiment a little bit. And I think here's the great thing about what we're going through. And you know this as a change Zen master, Sue, which is the longer we haven't been doing what we used to do, the less likely we're going to go back to that. And we're still in that new place. Right. And so the memory of how we used to do that is already changing. I have there's a friend of mine. She's in a small medical practice here. Maybe they have 20 people. She went back to the office a few months ago. She said, Steve, we hired a couple of new people, but the culture is totally different now. It's totally different. I go, well, what do you mean? I was totally drawn in. Now I'm like, now she's got me. I'm like, what do you mean? And she goes, well, we're all kind of the same, but everything's different. I go, you mean the people that left are not the same people who came back? She goes, well, yeah, kind of. And I mean, these are medical professionals, obviously highly trained, very, very thoughtful people. And she's like, yeah, it's not really what I wanted. I like that what it was. And I go, well, what is it about the new one? She's like, I'm not sure. It's just, it's not what it was. I'm like, okay, well, that to me just means you need to build new patterns.
Right.
But isn't that fascinating that even in a small 20 person, mm-hmm. where most of 80% of the people are the same, culture is really, really different.
Right, right. And well, I think that because we're really different too.
Yeah.
That kind of kicked our ass. What just happened?
Is.
Yeah. It's still happening.
And this is, you know, back to what we said in the beginning. We are just hitting now at 18, 20 months in a recognition. Okay, we're not going to go back to that. But the ground's not firm. Business leaders, and it's fair. We're all wait. Well, let's wait for things to calm down. They're not calming down.
Let's wait for the Delta to go away. No, not going to. I mean, just we got to we can't stop. We have to stop waiting. Got to do it. Got to do it. So everybody go to stevecadigan.com. His Instagram is at Steve Cadigan. That's C-A-D-I-G-A-N, if you want the spelling. Book is Workquake, Embracing the Aftershocks of COVID-19 to Create a Better Model of Working. You're going to obviously find that on Amazon. All right, Steve, again, just, you know, you're my bud. Thank you so much for being with me today and for being with us.
Yeah. Thanks, Sue. Thanks for having me.
Bye, everybody.